You're listening to the OneOfUs.net podcast network. Is there anything better than cracking open a cold beer and listening to your favorite podcasts? No, sir, and I'm here to tell you that the beer you should be cracking is one from our new sponsor, Circle Brewing, located in Austin, Texas at 2340 West Breaker Lane, Suite B. You can have a frosty one in their fabulous tap room where lots of seasonal specials await you, or you can get lots of their treats in the bottle or can at your local craft beer retailer. Try their award-winning Alibi Blonde or their diabolically rich Devil Knight Barrel Age Stout. They have so many solid choices, and they are the official sponsor of OneOfUs.net. Support Circle Brewing and support us, and we really need your support. There is no site without subscribers, and that depends on you. Please think about becoming a subscriber, because we cannot do this without you. The four different subscription tiers are there to give different flavors of bonus content, but we absolutely need your help, whether you sign up to give $2, $5, $10, or $25 a month. Don't be one of those people who loves something but won't lift a finger to keep it around. Help one of us and keep those podcasts coming. And for a film called Cold War, there's really not much actual war.
There's a lot of heat.
So okay.
There's a lot of cold.
I think it's a metaphor. this sounds like a generic, espionage thriller, but it's actually a very nice romantic film.
Did you go into this blind?
Almost blind. I had recently caught up with the director, Pavel Pavlovsky, and until somebody more credible can tell me how to pronounce it, that's what I'm going with.
Pavlikowski?
I had recently caught up with his 2014 film, Ida, which won the Best Foreign Film that year. And it's an amazing film. So I was very much intrigued by this, where he's taking some of the same elements, which is, shooting black and white in the old Academy ratio, the more square 4:3 aspect ratio. And he brings so much of what he learned on that film to this film, which is totally different. And yet you feel thematically and stylistically those two films are very much linked.
It's such a magical worldy, but with the black and white.
Yeah.
It's so transportive.
And it's a story about these, it's set in Poland during the, starting like 1949 and goes through like 1969, I believe. It's
something. Yeah.
It's like 15 to 20 years in a relationship of a man and a woman who fall in love with one another. And at one point, try to leave Poland and to defect. And they end up going to different towns, and their paths are often torn apart,
mm-hmm.
and yet they always manage to find one another again, and then separate again.
It's the definition of star-crossed,
I suppose. Yeah, it's kind of like you want them to get together, and when they do get together, something seems to get in the way, and they end up back on the road again. And God, it's hard to talk about this film without spoiling it.
But it's so funny that you always feel like that sort of cloud of the political climate, always over them. It's always like, impairing their love and their spark.
And it's the same thing with Ida, in that these are two films in which Pawlowski, who was born in Poland, but his family and his parents, on whom this film is very loosely based on them. They ended up defecting, and he ended up being raised in the UK from like the age of 14 and became a filmmaker in the UK. This is the first time, now that communism has kind of ended in Poland, that he could go back and shoot a film in his native country, in his native language, and using technical resources that were available in the 60s. So he ends up with a film that looks like it was shot in the 1960s.
Yeah, even to the point of being shot in 4:3.
It's 4:3. And what he had said was, this is a guy who did a lot of documentaries and feature films. He'd been a BAFTA award winner. He was kind of well regarded, but he'd never shot anything in Polish in Poland. And he had said that he had kind of become tired of all the tricks of cinema. So he basically just stripped out his toolkit. He's like, black and white, Academy ratio, Ida's pretty much entire, except for like one shot, it's entirely shot on tripod. It's like static shots.
Oh, wow.
Long scenes.
You'd never guess.
And it's beautiful. It's never boring. It never drags. And in this movie, he takes that skill set, but because it's a romance, the camera is a little bit more free, a little more lyrical, and he allows it to, especially since it's so heavy on music, both films have this thread of music that goes through it. And music kind of represents sort of like progress and culture. And both films examine Poland from post-war to the then current day, the Soviet era. But it doesn't, it never becomes a political polemic. It tells a political story through a very personal story.
Well, that monologue you just heard was Marco.
I'm sorry.
I am Chris. That is Frank.
I am Frank.
Now, this movie already is getting huge notice around the world. At Cannes, it took Best Director. It's been Best Foreign Language Film from the National Board of Review in the New York Film Critics Circle. I'm going to be hard-pressed this year to think of something that's a better film.
It's making my shortlist for AFCA. You know,
like, and it's a movie that, despite being shot in 4:3 and in black and white, demands to be seen in a theater.
Absolutely.
And partially because you mentioned it in passing, but this is a very musical film. I mean, the main character, Zula, is from a small village, and she is brought into this sort of like idea in Poland, the Soviet-controlled Poland, where they're bringing in various young people from the rural part of the country to sort of do the show of singing and dancing that represents their culture and their folk songs. And the guy is one of the instructors and the conductor of said thing. Victor,
yeah.
And they end up sort of hitting it off in a not creepy way. And clearly, like, can't keep their hands off each other. And things become complicated for them both when basically the Soviets say, we need you to inject more sort of pro-Soviet ideology inside of this thing that has nothing to do with their reason that they're doing this at all.
Yeah.
And this leads to the first real split of the idea of, like, they're like, okay, let's both escape. We're like touring the world. Here's our chance to escape. And one does, and the other chooses to chicken out. And it just follows them over time as they're both consistently deeply involved with music, with some quite astonishing, moving musical sequences.
Yeah. It is. It's funny how music, it really keeps finding them in a way.
It really does. And it's beautiful the way it starts, because he shoots this, like, it's almost like they're like the Polish version of Alan Lomax. They're doing field recordings of just rural people. Then they polish them into this big musical number. She has this one song that she sort of first introduces him to, and later on we'll hear that song redone like as a jazz torch ballad.
Right, yeah.
And then it's later on it's translated into another language, which she's not happy about. And so much of this film is about how, you know, these things don't always translate from one culture to another, and how politics just in basically this socialist fascist ideology, it just taints everything.
It permeates throughout
romance,
all aspects.
Music, culture, everything it touches just turns to shit. And, you know, that's why I think it's called Cold War. He's like, I'm not making a movie about the Cold War, per se, but
how far-reaching it was.
Right. In every aspect of their lives, it just creeps in.
I like the way this film definitely is a product of the history of European filmmakers in some way, too. There's a lot of Fellini in here.
There is, yeah.
There's a certain degree of Fassbender, even, I would say.
There are a lot of flavors in here. But I love that it's really, you know, every like major event that spanned decades has like these little pockets, and I think this one's such a beautiful one. And the fact that, you know, that this is a compromised romance because they are under the shadow of the Cold War, but at the same time, the fact that it's able to endure so much, I mean, that just almost brought me to tears.
Yeah.
The fact that these two are just like, you know, eternally linked together, no matter what.
Yeah, even though once they actually get to be together, maybe they're not all that great when they're like their love that's supposed to be, but maybe not in this world.
Yeah, but this is the only world they've ever known. Yeah. Their love is ever known, so they haven't been able to love each other outside of it.
And it's so just about these two people, despite other characters being in it. Like, there's a guy who's sort of like the guy who brings into the whole theater thing a you know, the Soviet rhetoric, who also has his eyes on Zula, who you feel like is going to be a bigger, more important character. Yeah.
Right.
And ultimately, even he is kind of like, at one point, kind of realizes that he's kind of an intruder on their world.
Yeah, yeah. It's like, no, go away. Yeah.
But I just love the representations of the time, swinging Paris, you know, yeah, all that. I mean, the stuff in the jazz clubs, I was like, I want to live there.
Going back to Ida, I mean, I'm not going to synopsize that film. It's worth seeking out. But there's a character who is a nun. She's very cloistered, and she's coming to terms with her own past, which is Poland's past, and is a past that, in this era, films of that time would not have been allowed to speak about them. So this looks like a weird artifact. It looks like a then-contemporary film talking about things that they were not allowed to talk about back then. And later in that movie, a significant aspect of that film is Naima by John Coltrane, which is one of my favorite compositions. And I'm like,
Was that from Giant Steps?
Yeah. And so I'm sitting there, and that was the last thing I expected to hear. There's a moment where you hear, I won't even spoil it because it's a fun moment, but you hear a classic rock and roll song. Mm. You just hear like this sort of drunk, you know, rural people singing these old folk songs to these polished, like, you know, Disney-fied kind of folk dance numbers, yeah, with, you know, everybody in costume.
Yeah, if you've ever been to Epcot Center during, yeah, the holidays, you know what this is like.
Exactly. You know, it's like, and then you hear, you know, jazz, and you hear pop, and then suddenly you have some early 50s rock and roll.
Yeah.
And the music that he uses in both films is always this sort of transcending element that kind of, it's like, you know, culture, art is somehow going to get us through this, and it kind of represents progress in a way. And both films utilize that beautifully.
Yeah, I love how the music was something that was, it's such a function in this film, and it's what people cling to, really. Mm-hmm. You know,
it's what brings them together, but also what separates them.
That's funny. It's ironic that way.
And like you said, it's odd how much, while the Cold War is there and it's more an annoying thing intruding on their lives that should be very different than they are because of it, it's really so on the side.
It really is.
It's really into these two people, and the music that they both love, and everything else is almost as just a shadow in the background.
Right.
You know, a chiaroscuro of the film is the Cold War itself.
He never hits you over the head with it, but he never allows you to forget it either. And it's such a delicate balance, because it could be this very, you know, both this film and Ida, which I actually prefer a little bit more, they could be very dark, very bleak films. They sometimes go to some very uncomfortable places.
Yeah, this one certainly does.
Don't get me wrong, neither of those films are what I would call feel-good films. But there's always hope and beauty in both. And just the technique on display is marvelous. You never feel bummed out. They're actually relatively short. They're both films clocking in around 90 minutes or so.
This is 85 minutes.
Yeah, really.
He doesn't waste any time, you know, over-explaining anything. Everything has a point. Every shot feels designed and composed. And it's just a guy who's basically said, I'm going to go back to basics. I'm going to go back home and shoot the kind of films I've always wanted to see come out of my country, using what they had available then, and just getting to just the basics of filmmaking. I mean, it's pure cinema. Nowadays, we can do anything with the camera, and the power of going, you know, I've got film, I've got a tripod, I've got some minimal lighting, I'm going to put the camera down, and I'm going to play all of this scene from this one angle, but I'm going to know when to cut.
A guy who knows perfectly how to block these scenes, they're edited just right. I mean, you get a movie like this, and it's only 85 minutes. That's one hell of an editor working. And his cinematographer is the same one he worked with on Vita, who, like you said, is using older techniques. He's not even going with big tracking shots.
No.
You're almost expecting a big tracking shot, like an Orson Welles tribute.
Right.
There's none of that in
here. It's such an intimacy here.
Yeah, and yet, shot after shot of this film, you're just like,
never
God,
boring.
This is beautiful.
Mm-hmm.
The way this is set up, I mean, the set dressing is just so cool. Every place they filmed it, it's like, wow, you went to so much effort to make this look just really amazing and engaging.
How about that final shot, this final scene in the church in ruins? Oh God, that just tore my heart out. It was so beautiful.
You know, this is something that I've been wanting to see for a long time, that I've been kind of craving. Because I kind of go back and forth. I love genre film. I love action stuff. I love every trick in the book. But we were talking about this when we were rewatching. You and I were watching some stuff last night, and we were watching the beginning of Lord of the Rings. And I said, you know, this is so amazing, this opening sequence. Every movie now does this. And I'm so tired of armies of 10,000 CGI characters smashing against one another and the cameras flying about. To see a film that's just going, you know, this is just about real people in a real time and place. I've got a camera. I got a tripod. I'm going to move the camera when I need to. I'm going to cut what I need to. And I'm always going to frame this in an interesting way rather than shooting it from 100 angles or making the camera fly all around the place to impress
and
you.
And it's really engaging.
It is.
I never do all this other stuff. Well, let's go to final thoughts. Frank, what do you think?
I was going to say, I said it earlier, I went in blind to this movie. I was expecting a political film, and you know, just the highlights of the Cold War itself, and I was not expecting this romance, and it was so sweeping, and you instantly became hooked by these two people, and you wanted them to be together, and it is just a tinge of sadness because it's a romance that can only exist in this world, in this time and place. But at the same time, there's such beauty there, and the fact that they go to the greatest of lengths for each other, and they never give up on each other, no matter what. You know, of course, their lives take. It's such a quiet film, even though there is a lot of music, but it's, you know, I think it's just the beauty of the intimacy of, like, their romance is just, it's wonderful. Both leads are great. I really didn't, I mean, because I went in so blind, I didn't think much of what I to expect from either one in their first, like, few scenes, but man, they broke my heart, both of them. They're so great in this. Even though I think she's like the Jennifer Lawrence of Eastern Europe.
Oh yeah, Julia Coolidge. She's got that Jennifer Lawrence thing. You keep thinking it.
It's that energy. She's got that energy.
There's something like there's another like classic actress on top of it.
Yeah,
they're merged, and like there's just something about her.
Well, it's a bit of Liv Ullmann as well. I think in her as well.
It's just like it's one of those turns that reminds you of the first time you saw an actress like Jennifer Lawrence do something amazing.
Yes,
like Winter's Bone, where you're like, now this is a star-making turn.
Yeah, absolutely. No, this movie is it's beautiful. It's sumptuous. It's so like. It focuses on the personal, not the political. It doesn't have to because you know the political is there. It's a shadow that's looming over. This is one of the best foreign films I've ever seen. I got to give this 9 out of 10. 1, 2, 3 o'clock, 4 o'clock rocks.
Weird. I grew up listening to American Graffiti soundtrack.
Yeah.
I had asked my parents for the single theme song to Happy Days, and instead they got me the American Graffiti soundtrack, which, by the way, does not have that song on it. You know, like except with like, well, it's kind of a television version of American Graffiti. It's got a lot of the same people in it.
So you want Happy Days, but you sell it for American Graffiti.
But okay. Look, Bill Haley, I was a big fan because of that fucking soundtrack. I love that song.
Absolutely.
Marco?
Having seen Ida and Cold War almost back to back in the same week, I am just beyond impressed with this director, and I can't wait to see what he does next. He's already won an Oscar for his previous film. I think he's got a damn good shot at winning again.
Agreed.
Have you seen Roma yet?
No, I haven't seen that yet. But that's on the list. I'm going to be seeing that tomorrow. I really loved this film, and I loved Ida as well. And this is kind of a I'm not even going to talk about the movie anymore because I think we've covered it really well. I just want to say, if you ever have an opportunity to go to a theater and watch a black and white film in an old aspect ratio, a lot of those films, I think, suffer on modern day televisions because of the columning, the black boxes on the side. It kind of makes the image small. But when you see it and you see the verticality that you can achieve in that particular aspect ratio, it's really just magical, and it's very, very, very rare that you are going to see a brand new movie that has those elements, and this movie has that. Short of going to see a revival, when was the last time you saw an Academy ratio film in black and white that was brand new? It doesn't happen every day, so this is worth going to see in a theater. I highly recommend it. I give this 9.5 out of 10 martinis.
Yeah, this is really, I think we're all on the same page. This is wonderful. If you give this movie your time and attention, I think you're going to fall madly in love with it. It's not a movie you can sit and pay attention to your cell phone while you're watching. You need to let this movie wash over you and just get inside its gorgeous little world. This is a director to watch. Like I said, the big contest this year for foreign language film appears to be between this and Roma.
It's also black and white.
Which I can't wait to see. Karan directed that, which, you know, obviously by definition is going to give it, like, a very strong resume.
You must see it on the cinema screen.
They wanted me to, and I was like, I kept trying, and then finally got the screener. I was like, I guess I'm watching it at home. But thankfully, I just got a new big TV. So
there you go. Yeah, that works.
But the real star here is Joanna Kulig, who plays the lead female role. Like I said, she's mesmerizing in this film. And pretty much her whole career is Polish films up until just recently, where she's been cast in a few American things, including she plays a role in the upcoming TV adaptation of the movie Hannah, which I'm, by the way, really looking forward to. Not the title role, unfortunately, because I think she would have been great at it, but I guess she may be a little too old to play that role.
She's a kind of Catherine Deneuve kind of... She looks like a 60s movie idol to me.
Oh, she really does. Oh,
I mean, partially because the way this movie is shot, you can't help but feel that way. But I have a feeling she'd be equally as good playing a modern protagonist.
Absolutely.
Everything about this movie is great. I'm going to give it 9.5 out of 10 existential bus benches. Which also made me sad. You watch that and you're like, this is should be really depressing, but there's something about it that's kind of weirdly uplifting.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Mm-hmm. And the sneaky thing about it is, you know, if you showed this to somebody and told them, oh, this is a brand new, or this is a 60s Polish classic that has just now been released on, like, Kino Lorber or Criterion, you'd go, oh, yeah, I believe it. Mm-hmm. It looks like it's from another time.